In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and my beast that fell from the sky, my person to rule them all, plucked beneath the earth, is the one, the only.
May the gods be kind to you. Travis Ratz here.
Travis Ratz and I are bringing you the Comic Exposure Podcast, where we dive deep into graphic novels and trade, and we are slowly coming to the, this is the penultimate episode of Graphic Novel Summer, our penultimate novel, as we are to the second to last of the 6 books for summer. And we, my friends, read Drome by Jesse Lonergan.
Lonergan, I think he's right.
First, second. I love First, Second, man. They put out some interesting, good books. And
what other First, Seconds have we read?
They did some Brian Lee O'Malley stuff. They've done, they just do a lot of like those. What did I read? A couple different things. I can't tell you, but I always know that a First, Second book is a good book, right?
Okay.
Like it's quality indie publisher, like graphic novel publisher. You know what I mean?
Well, did you read this in copy or digital?
I read it digital, and I'm going to tell you, Travis, I'm upset.
Hard copy looks beautiful.
I'm upset that I read it digital. It makes me angry. Yeah. I wish I had a physical copy of it.
I saw the physical copy of it, and it looks really cool with the same cover. But when you remove the slip cover, it's this beautiful orange hardcover book. It looks dope.
Well, I might have to buy the hardcover. So we are talking about Drome by Jesse Lonergan, our 5th book for Graphic Novel Summer. And I would say this is the one, Travis, I believe plays with the comic book form the most.
Oh, for sure.
I'm excited to kind of talk about the interesting ways in which Jesse uses panels and uses imagery as opposed to, first things first, there is a very, very little dialogue in this book. Scant dialogue, if you will, Travis Ratz. Travis, if you had to give us your rundown of what this story is about, can you tell us what it is?
Hand me the ball on this one. I really appreciate it with this book.
Yeah.
I would say that at its heart, Drome is it's a creation story. The book opens upon a couple of cosmic gods who create a civilization of, on the surface, humanoid creatures, and those creatures become very violent, and there is a cycle of violence to them. And so the gods begin to add things into the world in the form of other beings that are given colors like red and blue and yellow. And then those beings come to Earth, and they kind of bring different to humanity, like control or empathy or anger or rage. And then we watch these gifts from the gods play out in terms of control on this new civilization. I think that's actually a pretty good summary of this book in a broad sense.
I think so. I think it is this really interesting creation story, right? That kind of gets to the heart of humanity, right? And the creation of law and order in government and power, right? And how does that all work when you start from scratch, right? Like who leads, right? Why do they lead? What gives them the power to lead? How do different personality types, like you mentioned, lend itself to what civilization looks like? And Jesse does it in this kind of technicolor, very interesting form where the storytelling is more visual than spoken. True comic booking And the panels go in different ways and you're not really sure which way to go, except sometimes there's these interesting action lines that guide you from one panel to another, to where you would read it a weird way. Like it does like a zigzag on some panels as you're trying to figure out the motion in it. But there's something just, this is the art form in an incredibly creative, interesting way. That is.
Go ahead.
No.
Oh, and at the same time, with all that visual storytelling, it also manages to somehow be a swords and sandals story adventure as well. It's got that feel to it as well. So it's not. I don't know. I think when we're talking about, easy to think about creation stories. And you start thinking about weird out there comic booking, the tendency might go to think about Alan Moore to the extreme, where you're going to get this ethereal, really kind of heady story where, like, I don't know what the hell I read, but it must be genius. This is not that. It's not pretentious at all. It is storytelling stripped down to its essentials and then elevated through the art form. So we're not trying to, you don't need a doctorate in visual understand this, this story. And I love that. I love the daring that this takes with the chances and new things it shows as far as paneling, but the simplicity of the story and not trying and not having the bold choices overwhelm what's going on, you know.
I think
sometimes indie books and like sometimes art, like visual artist heavy books, can sometimes get too ethereal or too chopped up.
I also think like it escapes the issue you mentioned, it like the desire to overwrite, the desire to do lofty explaining dialogue to kind of tell you, oh, this person represents this, and this is this, and this is how I feel. Jesse kind of eschews all of that for just looks and facial expressions and what they focus on, right? So there's this whole piece where the first man comes down and he's put on this earth. And he's like, okay, I'm here. I've clawed my way out of the dirt. And then he sees another version of himself, a blue version of himself. And he literally, the first thing he does, it's that Cain and Abel, I'm going to kill my brother. He sees the hand come out. And he knows that he just did that himself, right?
Yeah.
But
he's like, no way, son.
Right. Runs. And just the paneling of just kind of the art of I'm going to, like, it's him throwing the rock and then black as you get, there's this continual like concept of arcs and directions with black space with white lines, and it's him bringing the rock down and killing his counterpart, right? And then he's overwhelmed by the amount of things coming out of the ground, right? All of creation springs forth, and he still wants to tame it and fight it. It's just this interesting, like, that character then, that one action is who that character is the entire time.
And that character does not get a name.
No.
At all. No.
No.
He's got an eye patch. That's what he gets.
Right. It's just very, and the gods are like, what are we going to give them? Well, let's give them time. And it gives them time and opportunity to grow and get better. And they get night and day and they are able to learn and subjugate the animals. But then there's war between one side and the other side. Right. And so the gods create this being to like subdue them and bring peace.
Control. Let's bring control to this. Like, how do we tame this thing? And then so I guess if you had to pick a protagonist for this, it's that character that Josh was talking about. It was referred to as Blue, right?
Yeah.
On there. and depicted as this female. There's a lot of superhero aesthetic to this, as far as what you might see in
it's just very big Barda
DC or Marvel. Yeah, like, yeah.
Big Barda coated, right? Or She-Hulk coated, but blue, right? Big hair, giant this, muscles. You know,
she becomes the first kind of savior, and who we follow primarily after the introduction to it, and it's kind of her reign, so to speak, in this civilization that kind of drives the story as the more characters get introduced to that world. But man, like you said, when we say there is very little dialogue in this, we mean very little dialogue. There are several key characters, like a character named Red, who doesn't get any word balloons at all, and is a huge part of this book, and maybe my favorite character in this book.
It is this, but still he's able to tell all of this story. There's this scene where Blue comes in and she's subjugating, you know, she's bringing control, and the guy with the eye patch, who's like the, you know, the evil ruler at the beginning of this, she kills the big giant crab that he's riding on, right? Like, the crab goes to kill her. She rips the claw off, kills the crab, and then she tells him to kneel. And he doesn't want to kneel, but she pushes him down. And then there's just a series of panels at the bottom where it's his face and her face and his face, and he's going to fight it. But then you see him look, and then it's the ripped off claw of the crab. And then back to him going, crap, that's me. Then the ripped off claw of the crab again. And then him going, there's no way I'm going to beat her. And just then he kneels, and that's all done in just, I don't know. It's all these micro panels, like 15 micro panels at the bottom third of the page, where it's just kind of the time, the cinematic nature of what Jesse's doing with this book is just, it's just impressive the entire time. And it's hard not to, I mean, this book is all art, right? So we can talk about story, but this book is all art, and it, and so far out of all the books we've read, I think we could put in as a book that plays with form, right? Plays with the comic book form very well. And then I think this takes it to the next level of playing with the comic book form even more, just going, hey, let's create this story. And let's not worry about explaining anything, and you're going to come away with it knowing what's going on. And that's the power of visualization, right? It's like a silent movie where every once in a while you get the card that says, and this is what happened, or let's do this, right? Like, it's old silent movie style, and you're still able to tell this giant epic creation story out of it.
Right. And it also, that's a good point that, you know, it's like a silent movie. It's also leaves it for more interpretation. The way you would go to an art museum, it's not, there's narrative art, of course. George Lucas is opening up a whole museum, the Narrative Art Museum in LA. I think it opens soon. But the sense of the narrative now becomes more interpretive to the audience, because there aren't, there isn't the ethereal voice in there in language telling you, oh, this is what this means and is saying, and this is how this person feels, and these are the major themes of it. Now, you can have that with language in a story. Certainly, you can have that ambiguity. But I think this does a really good job of giving you enough story so you don't feel like, wait, what happened? But also enough openness where you're like, huh, this to me, I think this means this. Or I think the yellow character symbolizes this. Or I think Blue and Red's relationship worked so well because of this.
You said what yellow was earlier. I'm like, oh, I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, like, I just put through that out there because he was just real feisty.
But like, that's like, to me, like, that is what that, it's unbridled, you know, fury, chaos, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what that yellow is. And it's this interesting thing where the gods are just plunking down, like putting their finger on the scale, if you will, right?
Seeds, there's literally,
there's literally a moment where the eye patch guy asks God for help, right? And God literally, one of the cosmic beings literally just touches him on the forehead and like, boom.
Yeah.
That's it. One of the characters that I thought was really interesting is that character at the beginning that dies, that's killed by, you know, the character is resurrected, but cannot die. So he becomes this like just a body of scars, because every time part of him is destroyed, he like it grows back, but disfigured. Right. So like, and he comes out of the ground again, a crocodile rips off his arm. He's stung by bees. He's bit by a snake. He falls off a cliff, all of these things. And it's just this, he doesn't go seek civilization because his first experience with civilization has been pain and suffering. So he stays away. And it's just just that interest, just being
he's
able
been
to
forced
that.
To suffer and witness.
Yes.
You know, as kind of like this watcher of the civilization.
And he's like the watcher of the cruelty of man and nature. Right. None of that is said in the book, but you can walk away. I think you mentioned it with all of these interpretations, just based on what you're seeing and what does that character bring to you as the reader. And there's something kind of like liberating and very, very interesting as a reader. And I'm sure as a writer, it has to be tough to craft a story, but not spell it out, because we're so used to everything being so spelled out.
Right. Yeah. And I think what that affords us, for me, this I think could be, to get to the I don't know, the point I'm trying to discover here, based on what you just said, is this is a quick read. You can read this on a toilet sit if you want, or it could take you days if you are looking and just at each of these pages as its own piece and then trying to put the lines together. There are some traditional panels that feel more like, oh, it's a battle scene on here, but there's always something special going on. So reading in between those lines offers this really kind of unique experience that I just haven't gotten from comics in a while. It makes me excited to see other types of storytelling in comics, because it really is this he plays with this 35 pig grid panel, right? And at the beginning of the story, he makes that very clear, where you have the gutters in 35 small panels. Yeah. And then what's brilliant about it is that's so grid-like. And then, as you mentioned, he uses like spheres and curves to cut and bisect that 35 grid panel. So you have this layering of very rigid backbone with that 35 panel structure and gutters. And then this beautiful weaving of lines and shapes and circles and spheres throughout it that I'm just like, whoa, it was really trippy.
And he breaks panels out of nowhere. And it creates this very three-dimensional thing. It's like, I'm sure you've seen, you know, sometimes on the internet where they put those grid lines in and then they'll put someone's kind of, like, it's just a static picture, but when you put the grid line and it goes behind the hand instead of through the land, it creates this 3D. And he does that several times throughout the book to kind of give this, to give depth where there is no depth. And it's a really, I cannot, and I was like, no, I'm not going to, I was going to buy the hardcover. I'm like, no, I'm not going to buy it. But literally, as soon as I started reading it, I was like, damn it. I should have bought the hardcover. It's so cool. It looks gorgeous. Travis, you had mentioned that this Sword and Sandals, you could read it quickly. You could take your time with it. I asked you, you read it before I did. And I said, okay, I'm going to read it. There's no dialogue. So what should my soundtrack be as I listen to this? And What was your offer to me to listen?
Oh, I said go for the Excalibur soundtrack. Was the 1970s ish movie Excalibur?
Yes.
Great
choice. The unfortunate problem, not on Spotify. So not a clear version of it on Spotify. Like someone created a playlist of a bunch of different orchestral tracks. I'm like, well, I don't know if those are the real ones or whatever it is. What I decided to do is I listened to Conan the Destroyer.
That works. It's very similar.
It was fantastic. It was because that first opening part of that Conan theme is like the right, it's got all that, and it's the drive of them creating it and the battle with all of the animals that come out of the ground, and then there's parts where it's subdued, and it like it just hit some of these things at the right moment while I was reading it.
He was born of fire and steel and blood.
The lamentations of the lamentations of the women. It was like it was such a great soundtrack for it, and I listeners, watchers, for those of you on YouTube, if you're watching this and you haven't read this book, and I can get it, I think Graphic Novel Summer is going to be a hit or miss for people, because it's an interesting eclectic group of books that we've picked, right? It's not like we're reading the current, I mean, we read before that, I just think it's interesting that before this we sat and reread a bunch of those, you know, absolute DC books, right? And now we're like, oh, we read a Drome out on first, right? We were getting very, like, very
esoteric and
esoteric and different, right? Like, not mainstream about this. But listeners, get yourself a nice little comfy corner, right, of your couch or in bed if that's your thing. Turn the music on and like set yourself a mood as you read this and experience it, because you're not reading it. There's not enough words to like say that you're reading this. You're experiencing this visual story. And if you can give yourself a boss soundtrack while you do it, go ahead and do it. I would say that sort of like late 70s, early 80s,
or 2001 Space Odyssey.
I almost did that. I almost did Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
I almost did the Dune soundtrack, because that's very like synthesizers and not the new Dune, the old 80s Dune movie. Just to create that thing. And I'm going to tell you, Travis, I am going to buy this in hardcover, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to sit down again.
We're 20 minutes into the podcast, and it took you 20 minutes. You know, I'm doing it.
I'm going to buy it. So,
I want to talk a little bit about some of the themes of this book, or perceived themes on here, or maybe not even themes, but just
feelings.
As you said, it is an experience, and I very much feel that way, that this book is more of an experience comic.
Yeah.
Especially when you add the music to it. And if you want to dress up, a little cosplay, you know, dress as your favorite cosmic god, you know, that might make it a little more fun too. Or in a onesie, just a onesie, a cozy onesie. Yeah. And
you
want to
like never ending story yet. Put the blanket over your head. Not bring now. Yourself a peanut.
Save.
Yeah.
Make
a little peanut butter and jelly sandwich while you do it. Man.
But one of the things that really struck me that made this feel very biblical in the sense of the way we think of creation stories is just the amount. It made me think about the amount of violence that we always see in stories, or in many cases, these religious texts where it's like Old Testament stuff, whatever, you know, kind of mythology you're living in, is just this brutality of man in its infancy.
I mean,
and because this book doesn't follow evolution, right?
Right.
We get to watch a stand-in for ourselves in the early stages, and it didn't feel too far off, honestly. That moment you talked about earlier where he kneels for the first time, it's the first time evolution has ever been subjugated.
Right.
There's just death all the time. You would just die. And so the idea that the first person to kneel, and just watching, it was like watching a bunch of like baby ducks, you know, just trying to kind of stand up and follow the leader for the first time. But of course, in really brutally violent ways.
Well, I mean, Travis, you know, as someone who grew up Catholic and has read those Old Testament stories, the Old Testament is brutal, dude, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, swinging the femur of your enemy to crush people, tying foxes together by the tail and swinging them around to like fight your enemies, right? Like, these are those stories in the Old Testament, right? Like blowing a horn to topple the walls of Jericho. All of that is very, it is ripe for what can I do with that and just tweak it a little bit and play with it. Right. And I mean, we read The Goddamned. Remember, that was a long time ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was kind of the early Old Testament story, but at 11. It was the heavy metal version. The Man of War version of that. This feels like the cosmic, it's, you know, why can't I think of his name? New Gods. Jack Kirby-ized version of you know, creation. It does a little bit, kind of the stature and size of these people and the dynamism of those pictures. Very Jack Kirby. It is the creation story or a creation story through this sort of medium, and it's brutal, but it's beautiful. And it's, I don't know, dude, it's such a good, I had such a blast reading it.
You know, over the 10 plus, maybe probably closer to 12 years we've been doing this podcast, you know, I first started as a story guy. I just give me like the story. And, you know, I kind of learned more about how to kind of focus on art and talk about art, at least to a better degree than I could. And this is great because for me, this is, in certain books like this, you might get a silent story, but you'd have a bunch of panels and they would try to be really poetic about it, right?
Right.
They would say something like the sinews of man, you know, this, you know, but here it's the paneling is the poetry. And it really is moving. Like, I was moved by this art. Now, I've been moved by comic book panels and comic book pages before, but usually in combination, where it usually feels like the cymbal crash behind an orchestra. We're like, oh, now that cathartic panel with the visual just really helps bring the text together. This is the art is the text.
Yeah.
And I, the little bits of actual text, the way I used to spend time with art, you know, I was kind of, I barely focused on, there was nothing to focus on there. So it was really interesting way to switch it. And in some ways, this book is really great training wheels to get someone to think about comics in the way that I think comic creators love comics, you know, with, because you can't rely on narration, and it isn't so esoteric again, where you would throw someone off like, that was really that. I'm like, yeah, you felt it. That's the point of that comic book art, is to make you feel.
So you mentioned your favorite character being Red. Right. This sort of
Red Beast from X-Men,
the Beast from X-Men, but Red. Talk to me about why is that your favorite character? What was the thing for that for you?
Well, I mean, obviously with the aesthetic of the character, he is one of these seeds planted in this earth, right? Civilization to help balance out what was going on. And you don't know what these creatures are before you see them in action. And they have this big hulky. And so it plays with expectation because he actually is the most gentle character in the story. Now, he does rage out when pushed and provoked on there, but he's in tune with nature. He's so expressive because aesthetically, he's not a human. He's a beast, which allows for other features that you could add to him, like pointier ears and heavier brow ridges. And that heavier brow ridge really can show like his pain when an animal is killed in front of him, or like when his love is being attacked, or when he's in love, or, and I think not making him a human and utilizing those features made him really expressive. And I found myself immediately within the first couple of pages being like, without any words, oh, I feel this character. Like, I know, yeah. I don't know who the ins and outs of the character. I mean, it's still kind of a mystery, but I was like, oh man, I connect with this character, not in any kind of personal way, but just if he felt fully fleshed out with no dialogue.
Yeah, I think, you know, that character was nature to me, right? Like, that's what that character represented, and kind of the violence of nature if provoked, right? Like, early on, you see him provoked and sort of the power of nature, but also the gentleness and kindness. There's a scene where they bring him back to, he's brought back to the village, and like, they're doing his hair and trimming his body hair and like making him look more manly. And it reminded me of the scene in Beauty and the Beast when they do that to the beast and they like curl his hair and they do his nails. And it's very much what that scene reminded me of. But there's just this, like, you take him out of nature, but he's still the gentlest person in there. Like you said,
he's Tarzan.
He is. I really enjoyed, and it might just be because this was the, you know, this character is the heart of the story, was Blue, right? Like our Blue character, you see her come in a rage, but then create and build a society and give them knowledge and language, right? And that language is like math, as the language, as they're building this place to live and creating this. And then you see her find love, and then you see her like lose, like go to protect and lose that love. And then the lengths that she goes to, literally strapping the beastly form of her lover on her back and trudging across the landscape. And she's like, I got to get to the gods, because I got to convince them to bring him back to life. And that disfigured hermit goes like, keep walking. And she's like, well, which way do I go? And he goes, it doesn't matter. Just walk until you can't walk anymore. And she does. And she falls into the underworld, and she's given the opportunity to bring him back, and she doesn't, right? Like, she does the right thing. It is going to bring back night so that their plants can grow. And just this wholly good character. Such a to see that path that she goes on, it was this experience. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked it. In the beginning, they drop her in, and as they are, as you said, in the beginning. And then one of the gods, and one of the little bits of dialogue they had is like, this is the same, if not worse, than it was when she wasn't there. And then the other god tells him, he goes, she's speaking to them in the only language they understand.
Yeah.
And then once she subjugates them, right, really, then she teaches them the new language, math and science, like you said on there. And that really made me think about maybe a uncomfortable reality of change and leadership is, or one approach to it is that to win over people, you have to speak to them in the language they can first to get the power, then to, in order to be able to enact change.
Yeah.
And so, but the rub of that is oftentimes in reality is, okay, you speak to that the group in their language, you get the power, and then you never go back, right?
Right. You never walk away from that piece. This was such an experience, such a great read. I need to go. He has a couple other things he's put out, and I got to go back and get him. I'm going to make myself a little piece of my shelf that has his stuff on it and go, okay, yeah, this is some really interesting work. If anything else he's done before this is even half as interesting, cool beans. I'm in.
Well, I watched about our podcast with him last night, and he does not come across as the guy you think he would be reading this book. In fact, they talk about that in the interview. They're like, the interview asked him, are people surprised when they meet you after they read your stuff? He's like, oh yeah, yeah. They expect me to be, you know, this kind of Alan Moore type figure probably. And he's just a guy who likes visual storytelling. And he talks about his previous works and where he does a lot of, he wants the art to tell the story. But he says that this feels like, there was one that starts with an H before this, and he felt like Hedra. That was kind of like
Hedra
kind of laid the groundwork, but it wasn't long enough. I think it was only 55 pages. So he really wanted something with volume in order to really kind of play with these visuals in just this kind of long form storybook telling. So if you do read it, let me know what you think about it. If it's worth reading, or maybe if it is, we can, you know, have another visual comic next year on the pod.
Yeah. I really dug it, man. This was a fun summer read. I'm on, you know, school year's out and we're on 4/10s, right? So I don't work on Fridays right now during the month of June. And so Gabby and Renner left the house yesterday when I just posted up, man. I got my little corner on my couch. I turned the Conan music on and just was in it. And I was like, oh man, this is great. It was only missing real physical page turns. And I missed it.
I read mine in the tub.
So, and yeah, back to nature in the womb, creation in the tub.
It was very womb-like. That's a good point. I felt so safe in there. Well, yeah. So, I mean, what a penultimate, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how we land the plane with our final book. I think we're coming through this series of books for summer really with, such a variety of reads. I think this is probably the longest six book stretch where like nothing has been similar. Yeah. And I think that's been a really interesting piece. So I'll be interested as we do our graphic novel summer debrief, our final variant episode that kind of wraps all this up at the end of the summer, to see what we've learned, what we've walked away with, and what we want more of in our non-graphic novel reads, right? Like what can our regular reads learn from graphic novel summer? Yeah. Folks, thank you.
Before you said you were speaking of more of something, and I think we just developed some more of something that we've put online
for anyone
who's a fan of the podcast. Why don't you go ahead and hit them with
So we've had a little place for merch for a long time, but have never really pushed it, never really like did anything with it. But if you want yourself a lovely article of clothing, sweatshirt, a long sleeve tee, a t-shirt, and variety of styles, the Threadless shop is open. comicexposure.threadless.com. There are like 8 designs spanning the new logo, the Word Bubble logo, the original double bar logo. We've got a little t-shirt on there. We've got the Trade Waiters t-shirt because Travis and I are notorious trade waiters, like traders, but
trade
waiters, right?
That'd be like Alan Cummings.
Yeah. Well, maybe it should be Alan Cummings on the shirt saying Trade Waiters, right? Instead of traders.
I thought you were going a different direction with that. We got a bunch of stuff on there. I think at least 8 on there. And I like the new designs. You came in strong and I was like, oh, Josh's shirt game strong. I'm like, I want a little of that action. So we were kind of trading off shirt designs on there. So we got quite a plethora. I like that Stephen King rules version of it on there. I want to get that one a sweatshirt. We need to make that a red sweatshirt version.
I believe it is. There is a red sweatshirt, I believe.
Okay.
I think you can get a red sweatshirt of it. Even a red hooded sweatshirt.
I was going to do the same thing. But I was like, no one's going to do that.
Just you and me. So, folks, go check it out. If you are a listener on the podcast and you are a fan of YouTube, maybe you watch some YouTube videos, you could watch an episode on YouTube. You can find us there at Comic Exposure. If you found us on YouTube and you're like, dude, I can't, these guys are too ugly, I don't want to watch them, I don't need to see 2 old white guys talk about comics, you could listen to us on your favorite podcast app. We are there. Or you can go to the website, comicexposure.com, where all the episodes are, all the show notes, all that good stuff. And we're on Instagram at Comic Exposure. I'm doing some trips on my shelf. I'll do some random videos. I'll pull some books off my shelf and go through them. I went through my Phoenix Comic-Con haul some books I got at Phoenix Fan Fusion. I'm sorry, not Phoenix Comic Con, Phoenix Fan Fusion. And then just random stuff, weird stuff from my shelf that I pull off and I'll go through and just talk about a little bit. You can find that at Instagram. That's the show, folks. We've got one episode for one book left for Graphic Novel Summer, and that's Mama Came Calling by Ezra. I don't remember Ezra's name, but if I did, by Ezra Clayton Daniels, with some art by Camille Sucre. Our two artists on that one. That's the last book we're doing, a Southern Bayou noir with a man in a gator costume. It'll be as two gentlemen who've read a lot of noir. What's it like to read noir that's not, that's not Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker? What does that mean for us? So we'll see you, folks, next trade.